Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Ta akanda vishuddha sattvashraya tvena tepi tadrupatayai vochyante. It might, okay, Mayavadis are going to try another angle. It might now be proposed that on account of the sages taking shelter of the undivided pure mode of goodness, they are also said to assume the status of that pure mode. Oh boy. Tatas cha swanubhut akanda shuddhasattva tasmin brahm anubhavanti iti chet. Consequently, they perceive Brahman within him, the personality of Godhead, whom they personally experience as also being of the undivided pure mode of goodness. Okay. So, what's this argument? That, the sages are said to assume the status of the pure mode of goodness, and therefore they perceive Brahman within him, the personality of Godhead. And the personality of Godhead, they also perceive as being of undivided pure goodness. Well, yeah, okay. This is explaining it away indirectly. They're seeing the personality of Godhead, but through the personality of Godhead, they're seeing Brahman. Sort of an indirect perception. And it's all possible because their consciousness is in the mode of unmixed mode of goodness. Therefore they can see the absolute truth even in a form of duality. Let me read the first paragraph of the commentary, see if that clarifies this. This is another attempt by the impersonalists to save their proposal. The sages, by taking shelter of the complete whole of pure goodness, transcended all false identification and realized themselves to be also akanda vishuddha sattva. Within that unlimited pure goodness, they experience themselves identified with that. Oh, I'm sorry. Within the unlimited pure goodness that they experience themselves identified with, the absolute truth reveals itself. Okay, let me see. Akanda. So we're understanding akanda to mean not only some goodness and some goodness that's not mixed, but the totality of the mode of goodness, because that's what Bhagavan is supposed to be. You know, Brahman reflected in or covered over by all of Maya in the mode of pure goodness. So somehow the sages managed to realize this totality, not just part of, but the totality of the mode of goodness. In that realization, they're beyond all false identification, and they can understand that they also are the total mode of goodness. So, in other words, they identify themselves with Bhagavan. They saw themselves as non-different from Bhagavan. And on that level of everything being the same, they were able to actually realize the absolute truth. This is the argument given. It's a step-by-step process. First, they realize pure goodness, and they realize it the whole, the totality of pure goodness, that is, that amounts to realizing Bhagavan, because that's what Bhagavan is. And by realizing Bhagavan and realizing that they're not different from Bhagavan, that turns into complete Brahman realization. Now, what's wrong with that argument? Tada yuktam. This argument is unreasonable. Why? Kalpana gauravat. One reason, it's unnecessarily complicated. It involves, indirectly through two different steps. First realizing pure goodness, then realizing Bhagavan, and then that turns into realization of Brahman. It's a complicated process, three steps. What they actually experience can be explained quite a bit simpler than that, than this triple phase, step-by-step realization. It's too unnecessarily complicated an explanation of what their experience actually was. In other words, if we just accept that Bhagavan is the supreme Brahman, they saw Bhagavan, period. It was a simple process, no three steps. They simply, Bhagavan came and showed himself, they saw him, and that's it, they're fully realized. No need to go through a complication of three steps. So, tada yuktam kalpana gauravat. This argument is unreasonable because it's unnecessarily complicated. And not only that, te chakshat aksha vishayam swasamadhi bhagyam iti sakshadeva gochari kritatvena uktataya parampara drishtatva parigatancha. And also, the words were said in the verses, in the description. They saw before their eyes the success of their meditation. That indicates that they directly perceived him, contradicting the idea of his being seen indirectly, through first of all realizing goodness, then realizing him, and then that turning into realization of Brahman. But it doesn't say that they step by step or indirectly. They directly saw him with their own eyes. Tasmat tasya shuddha sattvasya prakritatvam itu nishinameva. It is thus denied that this pure goodness is material. Because they didn't see some material thing, pure goodness, and then a better material thing, Bhagavan, and then they saw the real spiritual thing, Brahman. In fact, the pure goodness and Bhagavan are not material, because what they saw was Bhagavan, and they saw him directly. He was there, they saw him with their eyes. So Bhagavan is not material. He's not a stepping stone to Brahman realization. And the pure mode of goodness is not material. Tasman nate prakrita sattva parinamaha nava tat prachuraha. Therefore these personal features of the Lord, they saw his limbs and other things about him, they saw his features. Those features are of the Supreme Lord, therefore are not transformations of material goodness. Nor are they predominantly full of that material goodness. But they are manifested kintu svaprakashita lakshana shuddha sattva prakashita iti praktanam evoktam vyaktam. But rather, the features of the Lord that they saw, his limbs and whatever they saw in him, they were all, those, these features were manifested by the pure mode of goodness, which is defined as self-luminous. In other words, the spiritual mode of pure mode of goodness manifested the bodily form and the features of that bodily form of the Supreme Lord. This clarifies the actual meaning of these previously cited words. Te chaksha taksha vishayam swasamadhi bhagyam. Okay, and we already read the first paragraph of the commentary. I'll read the second and third paragraphs. This formalization, however, is too complicated. I'll read the formalization again. This is another attempt by the impersonalists to save their proposal. as follows. The sages, by taking shelter of the complete whole of pure goodness, transcended all false identification and realized themselves to be also Akunda Vishuddha Sattva, complete totality of pure goodness. In other words, they realize that they're God. Within the unlimited pure goodness that they experience themselves identified with, within Bhagavan, and now they understand that they're also Bhagavan, then they saw the absolute truth revealing itself inside that Bhagavan. Okay, that's the Mayavadi attempt to explain it. This formulation, however, is too complicated. It involves the double process of the sages realizing themselves as Vishuddha Sattva, and then Brahman reflecting on that Vishuddha Sattva. Vishuddha Sattva stands as an intermediate factor in this. The sages realizing the Absolute only indirectly through it. Earlier, however, the narrator Maitreya said, Te chaksha daksha vishayam swasamadhi bhagyam. The Kumaris perceive Lord Narayan directly with their own sense of sight, not with it, without any intermediate medium or reflection. They didn't see him in a mirror or on television. Indirectly, they saw him with their own eyes, directly. The pure substance of unmixed sattva cannot therefore be material. But matter cannot reveal pure spirit. Rather, Vishuddha Sattva is the self-luminous, illuminating energy of the Supreme Lord that reveals his form and the forms of his other eternal shaktis and the forms of the jivas. Okay. Whoops. Does that make enough sense, or we have some problem with that? Are there any questions? Yes.
Or the ecstasy of regarding the ecstasy of the Kumaras commented by which Mayavadi?
Jiva Goswami doesn't tell us who actually. First of all, he's not saying someone did say this, he's just saying the Mayavadis could say this. He's making up the. Well, anyway, he doesn't tell us whether he got this from anybody's actual statement. And he could have. There are Mayavadi commentaries on the Bhagavatam. Later Mayavadis did write commentaries. Vopadeva wrote an essay. He didn't write a commentary in every verse, but he wrote a big book called Hari Lila. He's a Mayavadi. Other Mayavadis wrote actual commentaries. Anyway, even if they didn't directly comment on the Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami can be applying the Mayavad theory that's presented in other books, in other comments on the Vedanta Sutra, say, or Upanishads. Jiva Goswami can take those arguments and apply them to these verses. But we're not told if he's quoting anybody in particular, if anybody actually said this, or who it might be. We're not told that. I try, when I know, to tell the readers in the commentary if I know who actually said it, but a lot of times it's hard to tell where the purvapakshas come from, or whether they're just made up, what a Mayavadi might say. Yes?
This, if I understand, this three levels, what they're saying is, first is seeing the material object, second is mode of pure goodness, third is identifying, second is Bhagavan, third is...
Well, actually, we're only... In the commentary, I say there's only two steps. There's no step of them seeing material things, material objects. Let's assume they're already self-realized, or they come to the mode of pure goodness. We're starting from that point. And see, the if they realize the totality of pure goodness, that's exactly the same as realizing Bhagavan. That's what Bhagavan is.
Yeah.
So it's not two separate steps. It's just two different ways of describing the same step. So we can say, like I say in the commentary, we have two steps. They realize pure goodness, and then in pure goodness they realize Brahman. That's still complicated enough. That's too complicated. We can do it in one step. We don't need two steps.
Okay. Yeah. So this last statement of the first paragraph commentary, identified
with the absolute principle itself. So Brahman reveals itself within Akanda Vishuddha Sattva, total pure goodness.
So that means the absolute truth referred to the Brahman?
Yeah, Brahman. Should I?
Because generally we.
Okay, I'll add the word impersonal. The impersonal absolute truth has that. Because you not to think that we're talking about Bhagavan.
We used to read Prabhupada.
It does, but this is what the Mayavadis would say.
Yeah,
they use the words differently. I just added the word impersonal. I put it in.
Okay.
The impersonal absolute truth. Anything else? Yes. They what?
That they took shelter of the complete whole of pure goodness. So, because what does it mean to take shelter of this? That they came to this level of pure goodness without any material.
It really means to meditate, to focus your attention on it, to meditate on it. Maybe by taking shelter of it is confusing. It's not the same as taking shelter of Krishna. Krishna is a person. Yeah. Can I just mark it? I don't know exactly how to make it better right now. I have to think about it.
No, so you know that it's a complete whole of pure goodness. It's unlimited because it's supposed to cover unlimited Brahman. So how possible to concentrate on something which is completely unlimited?
I'm sorry, what was that?
According to their theory, they have this complete, they have Brahman, and the Brahman is covered by pure goodness.
Yeah, but it's in the case of the whole thing, all of Brahman is covered by pure goodness. That makes Bhagavan.
Yes. And because Brahman is unlimited, so this pure goodness must be also unlimited. So how is it possible to concentrate on something which is unlimited and understand it completely?
Well, this is another one of those mysteries about what is this vidya, this ignorance anyway? Or this illusion in its aspect of pure goodness is infinite now and is covering all of Brahman. It's hard to explain because, first of all, we can't say whether it exists or not, even. As how we know, how are we going to describe its qualities? The qualities of ignorance. Anyway, it's just so fuzzy. It's like, and as soon as we try to figure out what this vidya is, like stepping in quicksand. No, it does not. Nothing makes any sense.
Because they're supposed to be able to get somehow, suddenly, they have to realize that this is a simple working. Which have form and so on. And then somehow after this form they have to go further and then they against it.
Yeah, we realize this form, but this form actually now we realize that this form is an illusion and now we see beyond it. We see the real thing. Well, it's just if you really wanna merge into Krishna, you wanna be Krishna, you're gonna have to go through these contortions. Yeah. You have to twist logic and language and everything. And if anybody with any sense looks at it, it just doesn't make any good sense. Yes. Really?
Everyone has his own.
Yeah, it's something. Yeah, it's something. You'll see it when you're there. You'll see it.
Yeah.
No explanation.
Yeah.
Because none of them know anything about it. None of them has ever actually realized. None of them actually is enlightened. All these authorities. Okay. Yes.
want to, is it possible to explain more on that? What is exactly the occult Vishuddha Sanskrit?
Kanda means a, Kanda is a piece. You know, would you like, would you like a whole piece of cake, or can I cut? Do you just want a small part of it? So Kanda is a small part, rather than the whole thing. To make jivas, you have to chop off little pieces of Brahman, or not really chop up Brahman, but you put little upadis on it. You know what I mean? Brahman can't be cut up, but you have small pieces of illusion covering it in different places or whatever. It doesn't make sense either, because Brahman doesn't have different places. But anyway, you get a lot of jivas by small parts of illusion covering separately. But Bhagavan is also another illusion. He's the big illusion, the best illusion. He's created by covering all of Brahman all at once. Yeah. That's what I mean by Kanda Vishuddhasattva. Vishuddhasattva expanded infinitely. Goodness, unmixed goodness, and not only that, but enough of it to cover all of Brahman. It's a rare thing. There's a lot of us and only one Bhagavan.
So the third line, they realize themselves to also be Akanta Vishuddhasattva, that means they realize themselves as Bhagavan?
Yeah, that's what I didn't say it in so many words, but that's what it means. My way of saying, they saw Bhagavan and they said, oh, that's us too. We're that Bhagavan. And when they got to that stage, when they gave up all this sentimental worship as a servant, when they realized that we're Bhagavan too, then that was the final step that prepared them for actual Brahman realization. You got to meditate on Bhagavan and realize you are Bhagavan. Then you can become Brahman realized.
So then the third line corresponding to that is within the element of pure goodness that they experience themselves, identify with the absolute truth, the reality itself is within that Bhagavan they realize.
Bhagavan knows everything. Bhagavan knows everything. He's omniscient. By my bodies.
Okay.
Their idea about Bhagavan, he's all powerful and all knowing.
Okay.
So if you realize yourself as Bhagavan, you'll know everything. So it's not hard, if you become Bhagavan, it's not hard to realize Brahman if you're Bhagavan. So they realize that they're Bhagavan, and then as Bhagavan, they realize the absolute truth beyond all duality. You have to become the best duality, and then you can be omniscient. Mm-hmm. And just by being omniscient, you know everything, and you can know Brahman. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to make sense. It's a fallacious presentation. It's shot with faults. So it doesn't. The argument sounds nice, but there's so many ways in which it doesn't stand up to reason. From our point of view, Vishuddhasattva is Bhagavan's Shakti. There's a difference between Shakti and the Shaktiman. Bhagavan's the possessor of the potency of the Vishuddhasattva. And the Mayavadis don't understand that. Mayavadis don't recognize the relationship between the Supreme and his energies. They don't accept that the Supreme has energies. So we would not say that what they saw was a Kanda Vishuddhasattva. No, what they saw was the supreme possessor of a Kanda Vishuddhasattva being revealed to them by that Kanda Vishuddhasattva. So we can't say the same words as the Mayavadis and mean something, and we can't use those words. We can't say it exactly the same way.
Because it's the commentary that's
wrong. You mean this commentary?
Yeah, this is the commentary on. From the viewpoint of Maya, all these sentences.
From the viewpoint of Maya, but you said from the viewpoint of the devotees.
This Akanta Vishuddhasattva, you
Yes.
I think you are paraphrasing my other statements in the commentary.
Yes, because in Jiva Goswami's paragraph here, he's quoting, he's paraphrasing the Mayavadis as using the term of Kanda Vishuddha Sattva, right here in the paragraph.
That's why I thought of put the word Bhagavan according to their understanding.
I see. I should
be
okay, okay.
Understand.
Yeah, well, since it, we added, I understand now. We added impersonal before absolute truth, so we can add personal now.
Yeah.
The Supreme Person. Okay, I did it. So, sorry, I didn't understand. So, Akanda Vishuddha Sattva, the Supreme Person.
Okay.
Got it. Okay. Okay, that may be a little clearer now. Yeah, so they realized the person, and then that helped them realize the impersonal.
Yeah.
Two-step process. Okay. Thank you. Yes?
No verse in Srimad Prabhupada said, Sattvam Shikham, Vasudeva Shikitam, Yatrita Kumam, Bhagavatam.
Yeah, so Vasudeva is called Vishuddha Sattva. Was it Vasudeva or Vasudeva? Shurda. Yeah, it's Shurda. Yeah. So it's the energy of Vasudeva. Yeah.
So it means that it becomes energy, and because of this energy, we can understand Krishna as he is.
Well, that energy, that spirit, that internal energy reveals Krishna to his devotees. How do we get a chance to see Krishna? By the mercy, by the grace of his internal energy. That's why we chant Hare Krishna. We appeal to the internal energy first. And then we approach Krishna by the mercy of his internal energy. No? Hare gives us Krishna. Yeah?
Vasudeva is
Shurda. So Bhagavan is realized within his energy, or his energy reveals him. Yeah?
I always wish that open the business to Vasudeva and build Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is always. Your consciousness and vision, there is a big consciousness that known as Vasudeva is revealed without any karma.
In Krishna consciousness, Krishna is revealed. In other words, yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay, I think we move to the next paragraph. Ata eva, tesham upaditva nirakrites. Tat tat anubhavananda vaichitri cha sampadyate. Therefore, by refuting the idea that these qualities are imaginary features, and that's the Mayavadi's idea, the qualities of the personality of Godhead are illusions. Upadi is the word, and we translate upadi as imaginary feature. But we've now refuted that the qualities of the personality of Godhead, no, they're not imaginary features, they're real. And by that refutation, it is also established that there is a wonderful variety of ecstasies in experiencing each of his features. The experience of personal experience of Bhagavan realization has variety. There are different kinds of ecstasies. Okay? Tataiva tam evam evam bhutam achakshateti iti tat tat vishaya saundarya varnanam pastutopakaritvat sartakam syat. Akanda Shuddha Sattva Mayatva Katana Matrin Avipri Avipri to Siddhi. So, also, the separate descriptions of the beauty of each feature they saw are meaningful, because it said they saw him. And then it goes on, the Bhagavatam passage goes on for several verses to describe the details of what they saw. So what's the use of that? From the Mayavadi point of view, they became realized and that's it. They saw Bhagavan, they saw Brahman. They saw Bhagavan and that was really Brahman. And that should be the end of it. But actually the description given by Maitreya goes into detail about the different features of the Lord that they saw. Well, that is meaningful, those separate descriptions, because they support the main aim of the discussion. And what is that main aim? The intended understanding being assured simply by being said that the Lord's form is composed of undivided pure goodness. What the Mayavadis want to say about what they realize is simply they saw pure goodness, period. There's no need to say anything else. But a lot more does get said. There must be a reason for it.
There is Akanda Vishuddha Sattva.
Yeah. No, but that's what the Mayavadi said. But what Maitreya said, I have to go back to it. I have to open up the previous file and get the exact words here. Te Chakshada. Where's that verse? Chaksha. 315. No, 78. 315. No, I want to know where in 78 it is. What do you, yeah. Okay.
Second.
Yeah, but this doesn't show. Oh, it doesn't show the paragraph numbers. Let me just search for it here. I got it. Tam Twagatam Patirit Opay Kamsa Pumsi Te Chakshat Aksha Vishayam Swasamadhi Bhagi. No mention here of any modes of goodness. Interesting. It just says they saw in front of their eyes the success of their meditation. And then it starts describing the details. That he was being fanned and the air was carrying droplets of cooling water and so on. All these descriptions of details. It's the Mayavadis who we're talking about, pure mode of goodness. That's not in the verse. Okay? But what we're saying here is that there's some use of describing all these details because of the fact that we've now established that there is a variety of experience in Bhagavan realization. It's not a monolithic, undifferentiated thing with no variety, this realization. Ecstasy of Bhagavan realization is full of variety. Therefore, there's a use in giving all this detailed description of the different features of the Lord. Otherwise, Maitreya should have stopped. Oh, I see. Shuddha Sattva Mayatva Katana. Maitreya must have said that. Previous verse, then. Shall we go back and find it? I'm looking at the description of what they saw.
In GPT 47, you got the
genus. Wait. Yeah, but 315:47? Okay, let me find that verse. 3:15:47. Okay, that's their prayer. In their prayer, the Kumaras tell him about Paramatma Tattva Sattvina Sampriti. Now you're appearing as you are the Atma Tattva, the Supreme Atma Tattva, appearing in the mode of goodness. They say that, the Kumaras say that. I was looking at the description of what they saw, but what they said in their prayer, they were describing him as manifestation of pure goodness. Okay? Now, let me continue. We're still in this middle of this paragraph. Ata eva niriksha na vitripta drusha iti drik sambandhitvan rupakritayev atriptir ukta. Their dissatisfaction was thus mentioned only in terms of visible form, because the discussion happened to then be focused on what they saw. Okay, there's all sorts of variety of experience, not just visible. You can hear the Lord, you can smell Him, you can taste Him, but particularly here it's described what they saw. It's, you know, just a sample of what their experience was. Their experience was actually multi-sensory, but what they saw is what's being described by Maitreya. Therefore, it says their eyes weren't satisfied. Their dissatisfaction is in visual terms. But we can also interpolate that they couldn't get enough to smell, enough to taste either. Furthermore, tataiva cha shabde naiva akshara jayitvam padara vinda parimala atmaka vayu lakshanasya tadvishesha shidarshitam. It is also shown by the word cha, simple word cha, and that indicates that this special feature of his, namely the air containing the fragrance from his lotus feet, defeats the infallible supreme. Okay, there was a description of what his body looked like, but even just the air that touches his body and is carrying the fragrance that comes from his feet, even that defeats the attraction of the impersonal supreme. Well, infallible, the akshara is the word that's used in the verse. It says akshara jushami, even though they were already realizing the akshara. But we understand akshara means the impersonal. Okay. Here in the translation I say infallible, I'm just clarifying it. That's the impersonal supreme. Anyata. Obayatrapi brahmanandasyaiva nirvisheshate upalabhyamanatve vidyam vijadushamapi iti upadi pradhanam evocheta upadi yugalasyaiva mitakspartitva prapti. Now, if everything they experienced wasn't absolute, was material, if the form of the Lord was material, and certainly the air coming from his body is material, then all we're comparing is two different upadis. That, you know, before they were realizing. Otherwise, if in both cases it was only the bliss of Brahma that was being experienced without differentiation, it would have instead been said of them who possessed wisdom, highlighting the imposed conception. Since in effect what was happening would only be a rivalry between two such conceptions. Previously, they had some theoretical understanding of Brahma. Then they saw Bhagavan. And supposedly, according to the Mayavadis, then they became fully Brahman realized. Then we have two previous, you know, intermediate steps. One is their incomplete Brahman realization, and then their personal realization, and then their complete, then finally it leads to complete. So they got excited when they saw Bhagavan. It was something new and better. But that's just then a comparison between two illusions, between the partly realized theoretical Brahman and the personality, personal realization. But actually, what they saw when they saw Bhagavan wasn't another illusion. It was the final perfection of the Absolute Truth. So the comparison is between impersonal and personal, not between one illusion and another. Okay, in other words, what the Kumaras were so excited about is not that, well, this is a better illusion than the one we were experiencing yesterday, but that now this is not an illusion, this is the real thing, Bhagavan. That's what they were so excited about. Not that, you know, this is a better illusion than that, you know, what Brahma told us when we were little kids, all this stuff about Brahma, that, you know, this theoretical understanding. Now we're seeing an even better illusion, and maybe tomorrow we'll actually see Brahma. No, they were satisfied that Bhagavan is the Supreme Absolute Truth. And we'd have to accept, therefore, that even that air that was simply carrying the smell that was coming from his feet, that was also a perfectly transcendental experience, not in any way illusory. Because that made him, that was finally that smell, that fragrance is what like broke the camel's back, the final straw that finally plunged them into transcendental ecstasy, was smelling the tulsi leaves on Narayan's feet. That is in no way an illusory or material experience. Okay, let's see what the commentary says to further explain this. Yeah?
What is the sentence of instead, it would have been said, of the who possesses wisdom?
Well,
compare it to this.
Okay, what the verse does say is that even though they were impersonally realized, now they're full of ecstasy.
Yeah.
But then, that's what we want to see. That's Maitreya and us. We see a contrast between impersonal and personal. Impersonal realization is incomplete. Personal realization is the real thing. But the Mayavadis are not seeing that contrast. They're seeing the contrast between different levels of illusion and compared to different kinds of illusion compared to the real thing, formless, impersonal realization. Vidya, see, okay, maybe I have to explain. The idea of vidya, according to the Mayavadis, there are two aspects to illusion, avidya and vidya. Avidya puts you into illusion, and vidya takes you out of it, knowledge. But the knowledge itself, like the knowledge of the Vedas, is ultimately also illusion, but it's the liberating illusion, the illusion that brings you toward a liberation. That's what we mean by wisdom. You know, that they, previously, they were just dealing with different dualities. Dualities that make you more ignorant, dualities that make you less ignorant. Like Bhagavan's a duality, he's an illusion. But meditating, for an ordinary person, worshipping and meditating on Bhagavan helps them become more spiritually advanced in a relative way. So that's wisdom, or let's say relative wisdom. And it would, so therefore, if Maitreya was thinking like a Mayavadi, he should have said, previously the Kumaras were meditating on different illusions, and now they're beyond all of that. But it doesn't say that. What Maitreya said is that previously they were impersonalists, and now they've given up their impersonalism.
It would have been.
I think what is not clear is what we mean by vidya.
Yeah.
And I just translate it as wisdom and leave it at that. Okay. It has to be explained what the Mayavadis mean by vidya. Because wisdom doesn't give a clear idea. Maybe I... No, I don't think I do. Yeah, I say something about this in the commentary. But, you know, you should get a clear idea in the translation. To wait until you get to the commentary, but let's see what the commentary says. When one realizes Brahman, he experiences ecstasy. So if Brahman has variety in it, there will be a variety of ecstasies, combining in various spiritual tastes. Otherwise, if this were not so, there would be no practical use in describing detailed features of the Supreme Lord's beauty. We are told that the Supreme Lord's form is purely spiritual, that nothing about it is material. Therefore, the variety in him is certainly worth giving attention to. Earlier in this Anujade, going back to 78.2, were cited the verses of this passage of the Bhagavatam, which describe the separate features of Lord Narayan's form. These included his affectionate glance, his broad chest adorned with the presence of his consort, his yellow garment, his belts and bangles, his hands, one resting on Garuda's shoulder and the other twirling a lotus flower, his shark-shaped earrings, his jewel-bedecked crown, his arms like stout rods, and his precious necklace and Kaustubha gem. These are all different details described in those verses. It is said the Kumaras could not see enough of Lord Narayan's beauty, but that does not mean that their other senses were sated. The new experience of this transcendental beauty overwhelmed them. Their mood could not have changed so drastically if both their previous impersonal realization and their current realization of personal beauty, if in both of these realizations, what they realized before impersonally and now what their personal realization, if both of them the only underlying reality was formless Brahman. If there was actually nothing there but formless Brahman, and everything else was illusion, or in other words, if the beauty of Narayan they were experiencing was only another illusion imposed on Brahman, their mood could not have changed so drastically. What's the big difference then? They were seeing some illusions before, now they're seeing a better illusion. But why are they so excited? It's still an illusion. If their vision of the Supreme Lord was only a projection of Maya of the Supreme, they should have been described as Vidya Dusha instead of Akshara Dusha. Akshara is Brahman, the infallible reality. But Vidya, enlightenment, is a material potency. An upadhi, imaginary feature superimposed on the reality. But then, because Vidya, according to Mayavadi theory, is actually part of Maya, of illusion. But then Lord Narayan would be just another upadhi, another imaginary feature, more attractive to them than what they knew before, but still material. They would have previously had a limited idea of Brahman in their minds, now replaced by a vivid perception of Bhagavan. They would still be short of realizing the absolute truth. So there's no reason for them to be so excited. Okay. Any other comments? Sorry, Kapoor.
You mean that when they speak that Kumaras are fully self-realized, so what do you mean by this? Has been that they were already self-realized before meeting this?
Well, see, this is another place where the Mayavadis aren't standing on solid ground. They say one thing, and then they say another thing that contradicts it. The Shastras tell us, the Puranas, and even some places in the Vedas, we're told the four Kumaras were fully self-realized. That Sanat Kumara knows the absolute truth. But the Mayavadi theory can only explain itself by talking about people who were Brahman realized but not fully Brahman realized, Jivan Mukta, still living in the material world. They're still dealing in duality. but they're supposed to be liberated, Jivan Mukta. So that's sort of where the Kumaris were. They were liberated, but not fully liberated, because they were still in the world. But that's, you know, as Jiva Goswami pointed out, you can't talk like that when you're talking about Brahman realization. Either you're a Brahman realization, you realize you're not. It's not in stages. Do you have a soul in this world who you call liberated? Either he's really liberated and he doesn't see any duality, or if he's seeing duality, he's an illusion. He's not liberated. As far as impersonal realization, liberation goes. So they sort of fudge it, you know, sort of try to fake it by letting the Kumaras be almost fully realized, not quite, but that's inconsistent with their own theory. Yes? See, for us it makes sense. Before they may have been fully impersonally realized, but that impersonal realization itself is incomplete. So they were the best Mayavadis in the world, best impersonalists in the world. But there was a real change when they actually became devotees. That makes it very clear, if we could just see it like that. Yes?
So there is either you Brahman realize or not, like I said, is the eternal.
According to the Mayavad theory, to be consistent with their theory about what they understand impersonalization to be. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Like you said, regarding, it seems like the Brahman, Ananda, how does that work? Because it seems that Ananda is a dynamic concept. It must increase?
No, not their version of Ananda. They've got a static Ananda. It's an empty Ananda, there's nothing in it. If I bought that kind of Ananda, I'd feel cheated. And I paid for this, I open up the package, there's nothing inside. And it doesn't do anything.
Okay, so according to that, you cannot define the Brahman, but how do you define the Ananda that comes from?
Can't define that either. It's supposedly defined in the Upanishads. Satyam Gyanam Anantam Brahma. Brahma is pure, real knowledge and bliss. But that bliss can't be a quality because Brahman isn't supposed to have qualities. So what does that word Ananda refer to?
Yeah.
There's a whole argument about that. That we get into the Sarvasambhadani.
Okay.
Goes on for 30 pages.
Okay.
What can the word Ananda refer to? If it's a quality, a thing, that's in Brahman, then the whole theory is defeated because now you have Brahman with qualities. Then it's not real Brahman, it's just an illusion. What has Ananda can't be the absolute truth. So what is the Upanishad saying then? The Mayavadi theory can't explain it.
I mean, it's not a synonym.
Yes?
It's not a synonym.
It's not a synonym for Brahman. Well, some of them say that, but it doesn't make sense. Why do you have to have two different words if they mean, it doesn't say anything in addition? Ananda and Jnana are just different names for the same thing. Well, that's one way that they try to explain it, it's just synonyms. But the synonyms don't mean anything in particular.
Yeah.
It's, then the Vedas are wasting words. And saying the same thing over and over again, and for no purpose. Yeah.
The word says instead of Akshara Dusham, instead of Vidya Dusham, Akshara Dusham word is mentioned. So that's why the commentary was saying that.
Because that's where the significant contrast is.
Yeah.
Between being previously impersonalist and now becoming personalist.
So this Vidya term is used from the viewpoint of Mayavadi, right?
Yes.
So we don't agree with this, their understanding of it?
No. Well, this is Mayavadi use of the word Vidya. We don't use the word like that.
So this is taking their point of view?
From their point of view. If we're going to follow their point of view consistently,
yeah.
Maitreya should have said Vidya Dusha. That just means that they were thinking about duality before, and now they finally gave it up. Okay, I think we stop here. It's 10:30. So we have a few more paragraphs to this Anuccheda. Maybe we'll finish it. Well, tomorrow we don't meet, but on Sunday we can try to finish this Anuccheda. Something difficult coming up?
We have one more file. It's about 40.
You mean there's more of this 20 of the 78? And then it goes up to 39 then. 39. There's not more than 39 parts. Okay, there's more to come. Okay, thank you all. Glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you.